Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, February 18th, 2026, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storchendi, naturopathic physician. My co-host Ron Meniza is out teaching a class. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storchendi for 30 days and also on my YouTube channel at Radio Naturopath. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. So, still managing my leg, still managing back, still managing various health things. I think at the moment I'm going to skip it because it's just so much to talk about, and I don't have any real updates at the moment. Everything is sort of stable, and there's a lot of stuff that's about to happen, so we'll talk about that another time. I went to the chocolate festival. We didn't go for very long because Ron went to a basketball game. And it was enjoyable still. It's always fun to go to downtown Main Street, although because we went so late, we didn't get to hear any of the music. But we did go to Jules Verne and say hello to Sarita and to Gay, and I got a treat there. She bakes a lot of really good stuff, including a lot of gluten-free stuff, and she had a lot left over because I wonder if the chocolate festival wasn't well attended because of the cold and snow. So she gave us a goodie bag to take home, and I got a bauble, which I'm excited about. It's a little Zuni butterfly made by Zuni people in New Mexico. I can't wait to start wearing it, but it got wrapped, and it's going to be handed to me on Valentine's Day, which you're listening to this before Valentine's Day. So we did that, and we went to Cupcake for Later and got cupcakes for later, and we went to the Willimantic Food Co-op, and again, we missed all the festivities because we went so late, but that's okay. So it was fun. I got a few free samples. We shopped at the co-op, and that was good. And that's what happened there. So the weekend that we're filming this, it's super cold. It's probably one of the coldest days of the year. When I woke up this morning, it was -5 Fahrenheit, which I'm not sure what that is in Celsius. It's a lot lower. It's probably a good 15 degrees below zero in Fahrenheit, in Celsius. So, super cold day. I feel very blessed that we have a wood stove because the wood stove really helps, and it's very cozy in front of the wood stove. So one of the things I wanted to talk about is Ron went to a basketball game and his sister didn't go because she wasn't feeling well. So I wanted to talk about, I haven't done an update on cold and flu season, what you can do about it. It's always a good idea for me to revisit it. And if you're listening and you don't, you know, you're not into the recorded shows and you're listening live, this is always, it's always good to hear again. So what do you do to help yourself in terms of colds and flus? So viruses vary as to their personalities, what they do, how they, their onset, what symptoms they present with. Some viruses come over a couple of days. Sometimes you feel good 1 minute and then a few hours later, you're like, yep, I'm sick. Some start with a sore throat. Some start with a cough. Some are mostly a cough. Some have a lot of sneezing and runny nose. So, and I can always tell that if somebody has the same virus as somebody else because the progression of symptoms is similar. The symptoms and the way that they present are similar. So you can also, you can treat the cold or flu based on what you see. And then there's also prevention. So in terms of prevention, some viruses, some respiratory viruses are best spread by aerosols. So aerosols, remember we talked about aerosols during the COVID era. And COVID primarily is spread by aerosols, and probably I'm guessing that other coronaviruses are as well. Remember, COVID is a specific coronavirus. It's COVID-19, and COVID-19 gets named that, and then it keeps mutating, and then it keeps changing and changing. That is how respiratory viruses survive, because they don't tend to kill people. Of course, COVID did kill some people, but it didn't kill most people. But respiratory viruses tend to survive because they don't kill people, but they mutate inside people's bodies, and then they go to live on because once they mutate and get new pieces of DNA or RNA in them, your body looks at them and goes, oh, this is new, and has to make new proteins to it, doesn't have the way to fight it. So they live on and on and on. This is why every year you can get a cold, because your body hasn't seen it. I think over time you don't get them as badly or as frequently if you take care of yourself, because you've seen a lot of the DNA over and over and over. And I noticed that Ron and I, we tend to get one cold a year. We had a little something for a day last week, but it seems to have gone away. It came and went as fast, it left as fast as it came. We had our main cold in late November, early December. He always tends to get it first because he's out more in group settings than I am. And I'm very protected in the office because I only see one person at a time. And even if somebody comes in with something, if I find out that they're sick, I mask, I open the window, and I'm not with them for that long. He tends to go in big group settings more because he teaches fitness classes, and he goes to the town hall, which is an office with a lot of people, and he goes to basketball games. So, because this is the time of year people are sick, the more people you're exposed to, the more likely you are to catch something. So if you go to gatherings, if you go to sporting events, if you work in a place where there are a lot of people, like a school, that's a great place to catch stuff, because you have young people with developing immune systems whose bodies have not seen the variety of different DNA of viruses that can come across your path. So then you tend to get sick. So when school is in session, that's when people tend to get sick. And, you know, when school has breaks, they have to deep clean the school, and then people come back and they get a fresh start. So what can you do for prevention? Well, one of the hard things about the season is that, you're very busy during the summer and you have a lot of energy, and then you jump into September, and starting in September into October, November, you rapidly all of a sudden have the season changing, you have the cold weather coming on, you have people moving indoors, and you have a reduction in light. Not everybody takes vitamin D as a supplement, so people are making less vitamin D. And they're gradually coming indoors and being exposed to each other and continuing to work and process just as hard as they were in the summer leading up to the holidays, where you're gathering with a lot of people and there's a lot of excitement, and people don't tend to eat as well. They start to eat more carbs and they tend to eat more starches and sugars, and there's a lot of holiday goodies, and those are suppressive to the immune system. So I see people start to get sick as soon as school is in session, and as the school year moves along, you get more and more illness. And I would say that the peak of illness is probably December, January, February. That's when most people get sick. Like I said, in our house, we usually get our cold the end of January, beginning of February, but we only had a one-day thing last week, and we didn't get it this year, I think because we got it in early December. So we got something in early December that set up our immune systems, and now we're okay. So what do you do? Well, in terms of aerosols, the thing is, you have to decide whether you want to wear a mask or not. If you're going into group settings, you don't see a lot of people with masks on anymore, but you don't see zero people with masks. I know that when I go to doctor's offices, my ophthalmologist who did my iridotomy surgery, he wears a mask when he's in the office. And he's young, but he decides that that's what he does. He wears a mask whenever I have not seen his face, except in a photo. He wears a mask. So I see people in doctor's offices when they're having visits, they wear masks. I see some of my patients come in wearing masks, not all, most of them not, but some of them do. I don't mask in the office. If a patient comes in and they are masked, I ask them if they would like me to mask, and overwhelmingly, they say no. If I'm concerned, if somebody comes in and they're actually sick and they're not too sick and I decide that I do want to see them, I will put a mask on, I'll put a mask on them, and I'll crack the window. So if the illness is spread by aerosols, then the deal is less exposure, wear a mask if you feel comfortable doing that, because masks do reduce your exposure to an extent, not 100%, but they help. and get ventilation going. We were talking about Luften, which is the idea of burping the house, where you go around and open all the windows regardless of the time of year and getting some fresh air going. Well, if you have fresh air going through, you're less likely to have it. You're going to reduce the volume of virus that's in the air. So you're going to get fresh air coming in and stale air going out. And so you're just diluting the virus. That's what you're doing. Another cool thing to do that may be helpful is you can, if you're in a place where it's appropriate, certainly in your home, it's fine. And in an office setting, if people are okay with it, you can use a diffuser with antimicrobial essential oils, and they're going to help to an extent. So things that can help to disinfect the air would be essential oils like pine, thyme, mints, eucalyptus, things with strong tea tree oil, things like that. You can put them in a diffuser and diffuse them into the air, and they help to make the air smell nice and fresh, and it will help to an extent to disinfect the air. Not 100%, but it can be helpful. And then if you can open a window, that's a good thing too. And when I'm in my office, my personal office, when I'm seeing patients, this time of year, even though it's cold out, the sun is coming in from a southwest angle, and my office faces south, so the sun comes in at this angle right into my room. And even if it's a cold day, my room gets very warm when the sun is at its peak, and then when it goes down, it cools off. So I crack a window if I can, and I'll crack a window until I feel cold, or a patient says, "Oh, it's freezing in here." So if it's a sunny day, I'm going to crack a window regardless of the temperature. If we have blasting air conditioning, then I won't crack the window. But if it's any kind of a day where it's a temperature where we can stand to have the fresh air, and it doesn't, even in the winter, if it doesn't get too cold, I crack a window. So opening windows, if the illness is aerosol borne, it will help to reduce the dilution, increase the dilution reduce the concentration of virus that is in the air. So COVID in particular was spread by aerosols. Measles also is spread, but mostly by aerosols. It's not so much spread by fomites. Fomite means that the virus gets onto a surface. So if people cough or sneeze into their mouth and touch a surface, the virus is going to sit on the surface. And then you come along and you touch the surface, and then you touch your face or mouth, and now you can get the virus. That's how fomites work. So what helps with fomites is cleaning. So since the pandemic, I have taken to disinfecting surfaces after each patient. So I used to like take the patient out and then immediately take the next patient in with no preparation. I don't do that anymore. So in between patients, regardless of what time it is, I let the current patient go. I go back into the room. I wipe down surfaces. It's kind of a good ritual anyway. I wipe down surfaces. And then I take out the next chart and put it up on the computer, get it all ready, and then I go back in. That's a good thing to do, to have a little bit of space between each patient. But cleaning down the surfaces, even if I cleaned it with just soap and water, that's a good ritual anyway. You're just preparing the space for the next person. I also have a lovely spray. That's basically a smudge spray, and in the spray it's something you can purchase. It's a smudge spray, has cedar and sage in it. It's just essential oils of cedar and sage with quartz crystals in the water, and then I can spray it in the air, and it's a lazy person smudge. So, I mean, you could burn a smudge stick, which has some combination of either cedar, sage, juniper, sweetgrass, and could have any one or two or more of those herbs. This just has sage and cedar in it, and it's in an essential oil form, so you don't have to burn anything. You just spray and you're done. So, like I said, it's a lazy person smudge. Hat tip to David Woolley for teaching me that and showing me that product, and to Paul Swez, the chiropractor. So, anyway, so cleaning your space is a good idea. Cleaning your you is a good idea. The less sugar you eat, the less alcohol you drink, the less refined products that you eat. If you eat healthfully, if you eat fruits and vegetables, clean protein, legumes if you tolerate them, And you know, if you dial in your food intolerances, so the one way to know that you have dialed in your food intolerances is that you have a minimum of daily respiratory gunk, that you're not blowing your nose a lot, you don't have a lot of mucus, and also you're going to the bathroom regularly. So you're having regular bowel movements, you're going 1, 2, 3 times a day in a comfortable way, and everything's coming out fine. You don't have excess gas, you don't have diarrhea, gas, bloating, heartburn. If all of that's going on and you're eating those healthy foods, then you're probably okay. So say you're not sure if you're dairy intolerant, but you eat some raw grass-fed cheese. And if you get digestive upset and you're eating very healthfully otherwise, and you have that raw grass-fed cheese and you get digestive upset, you're probably dairy intolerant. If you eat that raw grass-fed cheese and you're eating really healthfully otherwise and you feel good, you're probably okay with it. So I like to have raw grass-fed cheese, but I don't have a lot of it because I suspect that I am dairy intolerant. I'm at least somewhat dairy intolerant. I don't have dairy all the time. I mostly try to eat pegan, which is Mark Hyman's idea of mixing paleo with vegan. When I go and talk to Ryan over at Nicole's husband, who teaches nutrition, vegan nutrition, or anyway, teaches plant-based nutrition, I should say. We talk about all kinds of things that we eat, and even though I eat animal protein, I like to eat a lot of the same things that he likes to eat. So, because Ron and I eat very plant-based. But we eat some animal protein too. Ron eats dairy. He does eat dairy. When he eats cheese, he eats real cheese. And I mostly, if I want to have a little cheese for texture, I have, plant-based cheeses. So, and I don't eat, like, sit down and eat cheese as a food regularly. I mean, I will have a half a slice of cheese on a sandwich, or I don't usually make grilled cheeses with the fake cheese, only once in a while, perhaps. But I will put a few cheese shreds or crumbles on a salad if we're on the Super Bowl. On the day of the Super Bowl, we're going to do nachos and we'll have fake cheese crumbles. I don't know if he'll have a separate one that has real cheese on it. He might. And then, you know, for my salad, I like it that way. If I can get cashew-based fermented cheese, then I will have cheese and crackers with it. If I get a really high-quality cheese as opposed to one of the cheeses that has, like, tapioca starch and oil in it and things like that, and then I only have a little bit for texture and flavor. So dialing in your food intolerances is an important part of your immunity journey. Now, if you don't know what your food intolerances are, one way to do it is to do elimination and challenge. And shout out to Jaden Kayoni Tita and Jillian Tita for teaching me about the big bullies. The big bullies are processed food, sugar, alcohol, caffeine, especially coffee, gluten, dairy, grains, and GMOs. Those are the big bullies, and you can play with those. I always recommend starting with those because those are the most common food intolerances. Food that's processed and junky, and then gluten and dairy and sugar, you know, and refined starch. So all of those things can be that's a basic blueprint for checking for food intolerances. If you get off of all of those things and you still have problems, you can look at more other common food intolerances, onions, garlic, eggs, and anything that you're eating a lot of, that you eat to excess, you could look at that. And then the other thing you can do is get food intolerance testing. And if you do food intolerance testing, there's the IgE kind, which is the kind that tells you about food intolerances that will give you immediate reactions like runny nose, running for the bathroom right away, and with nausea and vomiting perhaps, or diarrhea. And that may give you hives or eczema. So if you have those kinds of responses, then you might want to do IgE food allergy testing. Then there's IgG food allergy testing, which is the kind where the immune system reacts over a longer period of time, and you can get panels for those. That tends not to be covered by insurance, so you do have to pay out of pocket for it, but it can be worth doing if you're really not sure what to eat and what your food intolerances are. Getting a test like that can be helpful. So realize that if you eat foods that don't work for you, you are more likely to get colds, flus, and digestive illnesses. So that's why I'm talking about it. It's not just about taking the right supplements. It's about having a lifestyle that helps you. If you get regular exercise and not to excess, that's going to help your immune system. If you exercise excessively, which I kind of think Ron does, because he teaches this time of year, he teaches probably in the double digits of fitness classes. And then he wonders why he gets sick, because he's doing all this cardio exercise just about every day except Saturday. And because he teaches a spin class, I think he's teaching spin classes 6 days a week right now. And then he's teaching other fitness classes too. He's teaching balance and senior yoga. And so he's teaching a lot of classes. I think it's in the range of 10 or more classes a week. So that's at this time of year, when you want to be more yin and relaxing, that's a lot of exercise. So I think it runs his immune system down. And he gets up early in the morning and teach these classes, although, you know, that's a good time of day for him. I don't know what time he would go to sleep if he didn't have me influencing to go to bed later than he ordinarily would, because I don't get up that early in the morning anymore. That's just not my time of day. My time of day to get up is between 7 and 8-ish or so. So anyway, over-exercising can suppress your immune system. Getting the right amount of exercise for you, exercise that makes you feel healthy and isn't too excess, is a good thing. It will help support your immune system. Getting no exercise is not good for your immune system. Remember that exercise isn't just about maintaining weight. Exercise is about building muscle, creating balance. It's about detoxification. And it is about stimulating your immune system. And it's about getting circulation going through all of your organs, including the organs of detoxification, such as your liver and your kidneys, and exercising your blood vessels as well, so that they stay supple and you're less likely to have high blood pressure and cardiovascular disease in general. When you get regular cardio exercise, it's what's called a positive inotrope. And what that means, it's something that makes your heart more efficient. And when your heart is more efficient, with each beat, you pump out more blood. So your heart doesn't have to beat as many times, and your pulse, your resting pulse rate goes down. And when your resting pulse rate goes down, your heart beats less times in a day, which, guess what? It extends the life of your heart. So positive inotropes are good things. And basic exercise is a positive inotrope. So getting resistance training is good for you as well, because you're building muscle mass. When you build muscle mass, you increase your metabolism and you increase your balance and strength and all kinds of other things. And so that helps your immune system as well. So here you've heard about lifestyle things, and then reducing stress. Stress will increase your ability to pick up illnesses, because you're using your stress hormone. Your stress hormones run your immune system. So when you are resting, your stress hormones, your adrenaline and your epinephrine, norepinephrine, run your immune system. And if you're not using them for something like doing the tax reports, you can rest and sleep and they can run your immune system. They'll run your white blood cells and your lymphatics and all the other things that need to happen so that your immune system stays clear. But if you are doing double duty, your immune system's your adrenals are trying to run your immune system as well as run your life, then you're going to have a situation where they can't do two things well, because they're multitasking and they're not as available to run your immune system, so you're going to be more likely to get sick. So if you don't rest, your body will make you rest with an illness. That's kind of how that goes. So restorative activities are helpful for your immune system. That's what's the best restorative activity for you? It's the same as the best exercise for you. It is the one you'll do. So a restorative activity is something you intentionally do to help to access the ventral vagus nerve. And the ventral vagus nerve is the part of the vagus nerve that is in the front of the body, as opposed to the dorsal vagus nerve, which is in the back of your body. The dorsal vagus nerve is involved in your fight or flight, and the ventral vagus nerve is your rest and digest. It's when you access the ventral vagus nerve, it helps your digestion, it helps your detoxification, it helps you to feel safe, calm, and relaxed. And that's what you want to access. So how do you do that? The number one easiest way to do it is deep breathing. And you can do box breathing, but what you want to do is deep breathe slowly and intentionally, and preferably you inhale for a shorter period of time than you exhale. So those long exhales are what helps to calm your cortisol. And you can do that on its own. You can do it as part of a meditation. You can do it as part of a guided meditation. You can do it any time of day or night, anywhere you are. If you're standing in line at the grocery store, you can do box breathing, or you can do 4-2-6 or 4-4-8 breathing, where you breathe in for 4, you hold for 4, you exhale for 8, or just breathe in for 4 and exhale for 8. And once you get the hang of it, you don't have to count. When I'm doing my yin and restorative yoga, I don't count unless that's part of the exercise. If I'm working with a teacher and the teacher is counting for me, then I'll count. Otherwise, I don't count. I've just learned how to pretty much breathe in for a certain amount of time and then slowly exhale, and that helps to calm me down. So I try to do a practice like that pretty much every day. The only time I don't is when I go to the chiropractor. The chiropractor tells me, I don't want you to do any more exercise. I just want you to go home and rest. So if I wanted to, I could do a meditation. I don't do yin and restorative yoga. I don't do any kind of yoga or stretching after that chiropractic appointment, but I could do a yoga nidra or guided meditation. I probably should do that, because that would probably help to set the adjustment in. But you can do meditation anytime, anywhere, and meditation, deep breathing will help you to calm your vagus nerve. Now, there's loads of things you can do to access the ventral vagus nerve, and those are things you can look up, but there's, little simple things that you can do. You can rub the tragus of your ear, which is that little funny thing in the front, put your fingers around the outside of your ear, and that thing in the middle that's in the front, that little funny thing that sticks out, that's your tragus, and you can rub on that, and that the vagus nerve comes through there. So if you rub on that, you'll stimulate the ventral vagus nerve. You can rub on the just above the ear canal that your ventral vagus nerve goes through there. You can pull on your earlobe. You can rub behind your ear. These are all access points for the ventral vagus nerve. You can pull on your SCM muscle. That's the sternocleidomastoid. That's the muscle that connects that bump in the back of on your skull behind your ear down to your clavicle, and it goes down to your sternum. So sterno is the sternum, clido is your collarbone, and mastoid is that bump behind your ear. And so that muscle, the vagus nerve runs along that. So if you stimulate that, you will access your ventral vagus nerve. It's really simple stuff to do. So we haven't even gotten to what to take. What to eat is fruits and vegetables, clean protein, whether you're vegetarian or not. If you're vegetarian, you can go ahead and eat legumes, and if you do a little bit of soy, you could do a little bit of soy, and nuts and seeds. Anyway, dial in your healthy diet and avoid processed foods, and that's what you eat. And then make sure you drink plenty of water. You can drink herbal tea as well. If you do well with coffee, you can drink coffee. If you don't, it's not a good idea. Green tea and white tea and black tea are really good for your immune system. Watch the caffeine if you don't tolerate it well. If you do tolerate it well, that's fine. So honey can be helpful for the immune system. It's better to get raw local honey. I have become enamored of hot honey. So hot honey, you can buy hot honey already made. You probably can make it too. I haven't tried to do it yet, because I think I took some honey and I put some cayenne pepper in it, and didn't turn out all that great, because when they make the hot honey, they steep it for a long time, and now you have this nice hot honey. Hot honey is, if you like that spicy taste, it's really great in tea, it's really great in coffee, it's really great in the latte. My favorite latte to make right now is I'll get some cold brew coffee and I'll put a natural creamer in it. I'll add hot honey, ginger, cinnamon, and cardamom, and it's kind of like a spicy Turkish coffee, so you add just enough to make it sweet, and then you have that spice in it, and you actually have something that's kind of healthy. And then I also like to drink matcha lattes as well. Now, here's a pro tip. It sounded good online, so I ordered matcha, vanilla flavored matcha online. The vanilla flavored matcha came, and the notes in it are too maply and kind of fake. I'm not going to do that again. I'm going to go through this matcha, this vanilla matcha, and then when I'm done, I'm going to get plain matcha from the co-op, and if I want it to be vanilla, I'm going to add real vanilla extract because it tastes like real vanilla as opposed to whatever they put in this matcha, and it's not overpowering. So I like to have cinnamon and vanilla in my matcha, but real vanilla extract, that would be my tip to the wise. And in my latte, I don't do dairy for my latte, so I'm doing some kind of healthy dairy alternative. And I think it's better to do a dairy alternative with fat in it because it brings out the flavor of the matcha. Not everybody likes matcha. I happen to love it. That's why I think I was Asian in a past life. I probably have a teeny tiny bit of Asian genetically because Eastern European Jews, if any of our family, if we have any family history of being near Russia, Asian, you can have a little bit Asian in you because Mongolia borders on Russia. And if you're from Eastern Europe and there was some Russian, Mongolia is on it's below Russia, it's south of Russia, and so are all of the Eastern European countries. They're pretty much south of Russia. So if we had Russian ancestry, they kind of migrated down to Poland and Ukraine, which is where my family is from, and we got a teeny tiny bit of Asian in us. My girlfriend Stephanie, she, if you look at her, she looks like she's a little bit Asian. We joke that she looks like Lucy Liu, and she's Eastern European Jewish, and I think both her parents are of Russian ancestry, so that she probably quite likely has some Asian descent. I didn't realize that that's a thing with Eastern European Jews. We can have some Asian in us. I don't know if that's why I like to eat Asian food. It just really agrees with me. I like matcha a lot more than a lot of non-Asian people. I like matcha ice cream, lattes, just to drink it. I like to drink green tea. I like to eat sushi. I like to eat all kinds of Asian cuisine, whether it's Chinese or Japanese or Thai or Korean. All of those cuisines work really well for me. The real heavy classic American meat and potatoes and small amounts of vegetables does not work for me. Real heavy pasta does not work for me. But eating that lighter, very vegetable-based fare, that really works for me. And one might say also because I'm a blood type A, if you look into the Diadamo theories of the blood type diet, I'm a classic blood type A because I do very well with a very plant-based diet. And, you know, I can be vegetarian. I have been vegetarian in the past. Now I eat some animal protein, and I don't eat animal protein. I don't eat huge amounts of animal protein because I can't tolerate it, but I tolerate some animal protein. So that's why I say Mark Hyman's vegan diet is that's the direction I like to go, because I'm not great with dairy. I'm great with lots of plant-based foods and reasonable amounts of animal protein. And so that's what Mark Hyman's vegan diet is all about. So I like to eat that way. All right. So you're probably wondering what else you can do for, so let's get into some nuts and bolts of things that you can do. We said rest, reduce sugar and alcohol, mask if you're comfortable doing that. Let's talk about neti pots. So the neti pot, if you're actually sick and the sickness is focused in your nose, especially if you're having a lot of sneezing and a lot of nasal congestion, If you're home and in a place where you can do it, you know how you get flares of runny nose where you'll get to a point where you're sneezing and you have a lot of congestion coming out. That's a great time to use the neti pot. So every time that happens, you can use the neti pot, and your neti pot, depending on the size of it, most neti pots hold about a cup of water in them. You add warm water and about a half teaspoon of sea salt. What you do is you add salt to your comfort. By the way, you never don't add salt. You always add salt. Why do you add salt? Because the whole purpose of the neti pot works osmotically. And if you put plain water in your nose, you will feel like you're drowning. Why do you feel like you're drowning? Because of osmosis. So your nasal cavities have salt in them. They have physiological saline. So if you ever happen to drop snot on your tongue, you'll taste that it tastes salty. You find it tastes salty. Well, guess what? Your fluids in your nose have a level of salt in them. So what is osmosis? fluid travels from an area of low concentration to an area of high concentration across a semipermeable membrane. The semipermeable membrane is your nasal mucosa. So the plain water will cross over your nasal mucosa into your tissues, and it will swell your tissues, and you'll feel like you're drowning. So that's why. So what you want to do is you want to have a hyperphysiological saline solution. So your physiological saline is about 0.9%. So when you put in half a teaspoon of sea salt into about a cup of warm water, that's a hypersaline. I'm not sure what the percentage is, but it's more than 0.9%. So you put that in, and then it goes in, and now you have a situation where the high concentration is in the it's in the solution that you've instilled into your nose. And so the fluid that's inflaming your nasal cavities is going to go across your mucous membrane into the solution. And that's what you want. It's going to reduce inflammation. That's sea salt. Sea salt, when you put sea salt on living cells, it doesn't happen when it's on your skin, but in solution, if there's a microbe, it'll kill it. Viruses and bacteria and fungus don't do well in a hypersaline solution. So remember, what lives in the Dead Sea? It's a trick question. Why do you think it's called the Dead Sea? What lives in the Dead Sea? Nothing. So if you put a lot of salt in your nose, it's going to kill whatever's in there. So the viruses that you have going crazy, the bacteria, any bacteria that's growing in there, and fungus, they're all going to die. So if you do a neti pot every day in the winter, you're going to keep a minimum of microorganisms living in that nose, and you'll be less likely to get sick. And if you do a neti pot while you're sick, and especially if you do it frequently, you're going to be killing the viruses as they bloom, and you're going to have a lower viral load in your nose, and you will shorten the length of your cold. There have been studies on respiratory viruses and COVID in particular. People who did neti pots were sick for a day or more less than people who didn't. So neti pots are very useful. If you won't use the neti pot because you can't stand the idea of pouring the water in one side and out the other, all is not lost. You can do nasal sprays. The thing, if you buy a nasal spray, just a saline nasal spray, they're usually physiological saline. That's really, it'll be helpful to an extent because you're squirting salt water into your nose, but you're not going to get as much of that anti-inflammatory situation, but you will be killing microorganisms that are living in the nose. That's why I like to recommend getting a xylitol-based nasal spray. Keep the xylitol away from the dogs. It's very bad for dogs. But get a xylitol nasal spray. And I would get two bottles. What I like to do is I get two bottles, and I make half a bottle of that and half a bottle of a mixture of essential oils. And I put that in as well. And then you do your neti pot, or if you won't do the neti pot, it's okay. Blow your nose well. And you blow your nose now before you do the neti pot or a nasal spray. Blow your nose well, and then you do one squirt in each nostril. And I would recommend if you do the neti pot, then I would do that afterwards to keep the microbial level down. And I do nasal spray, my antimicrobial nasal spray daily as part of my hygiene. It comes along with brushing the teeth. I brush my teeth. After I'm done brushing my teeth, I do nasal spray. And then when you're done with the nasal spray, what do? You gargle. Why do you gargle? Because viruses collect in the nose. If they're respiratory viruses, they collect first in the nose, and they also collect in the back of the throat. So if you gargle every day, there's going to be less stuff that's sticking back there. You're going to be less likely to get things like strep throat or organisms that like the back of the throat. There's some of them like the back of the throat more. Also, if you happen to get a virus where you get postnasal drip, so it's not coming out the front of the nose as much, but it's dripping backwards into your throat, you're going to get an irritated throat, and you're going to get a collection of viruses back there. So if you gargle, that's not going to stick around. And what do you gargle with? You could do just warm water, but it won't work as well as if you do salt water. And salt water with tea tree oil in it is also a good idea. You could also get, even if you got a commercial mouthwash from the drugstore that has essential oils in it, that's fine. There are commercial brands. I'm trying not to mention them because, you know, community radio, but there are commercial brands of mouthwash that have antimicrobial essential oils in them. You can also get health food store brands that have xylitol and a lot of different antimicrobial herbs in them, and you can gargle with those. And again, I do that as part of my hygiene. I swish my mouth for my oral flora, and then I also gargle with it. And so you do the nose first and then you gargle, because stuff will tend to drip in the back of your throat when you use the neti pot or nasal spray, and then you clean it out when you gargle. So neti pot and nasal cleansing and gargling is a good idea. Why are steroids not a great idea? Because steroid nasal sprays, they're going to come in with names like fluticasone, mometasone, budesonide. Those make your nose feel better because they're directly anti-inflammatory, but they suppress the immune system in your nose. So the immune system in there is going to be crippled at fighting microorganisms. Also, steroids are catabolic. They break down tissue. So when you're instilling steroid into your nose, you're breaking down the tissue. Therefore, you're breaking down the immune system, and the tissues are going to be more friable. That means they're going to break apart more, and viruses can get in there more easily. So you're actually reducing your immune system by using steroid nasal sprays. So that's why I try to recommend not doing that if you're able, and doing the neti pot and doing, antimicrobial nasal sprays. So my favorite nasal spray to buy has grapefruit seed extract and xylitol and salt in it. And then I add essential oils into that. So those are simple things that you can do. The neti pot, nasal spray, gargle. If you won't do a nasal spray, there's one more thing to recommend, and that's that you get a cotton swab, and you can stick the cotton swab in salt water and maybe a drop of essential oil like tea tree oil, and you can clean your nose out with that if you'll tolerate that. I've had some people tolerate that better than any of the other things. They're willing to do that. So those are things you can do. And then as far as things you can take, you might want to increase your intake. So you can do this with foods. You can eat high vitamin C foods like citrus and strawberries and peppers this time of year. And you can squeeze lemon into your water. You can also take things with vitamin A in it. Your vitamin D level is important. I like to see vitamin D levels at least in the 50s. If you're not in the 50s, you probably need to take something. In Connecticut, it's very hard to get your vitamin D level up because most of the year, the sun isn't high enough in the sky for us to make adequate vitamin D. So I test people's vitamin D level, and the vitamin D level tends to be low. And so you want to make sure that vitamin D level is adequate. Vitamin D is so important for so many systems in your body, including your immune system. In fact, you can take extra vitamin D when you're sick. And you have to talk to your practitioner about how much that might be. Personally, I take, 2,000 to 4,000, sometimes 6,000 IU of vitamin D a day. I take it in a liquid. It's very economical that way. And you want the vitamin D to be, if you're going to take a liquid, it should be in fat. If you're taking a pill, you want to take it with some fat because it is a fat-soluble vitamin. So the vitamin D I get in a liquid is either an MCT oil, which is extract of coconut, or the one I'm taking now is an olive oil. So I'll do either of those. Vitamin C, you want to make sure you're getting on board. You can take vitamin C in pills. If you take it in pills, it's a good idea to take it with bioflavonoids in it. It could have acerola cherry or camu camu in it as well. But the bioflavonoids, citrus bioflavonoids, and hesperidin and rutin are also wonderfully anti-inflammatory. And vitamin C and bioflavonoids are strengthening to your mucous membranes. So they'll help those they'll help the mucous membranes be more impervious to anything that's going to try to enter it. Vitamin E is a good idea too. You can get vitamin E by eating nuts and seeds. If you're going to take vitamin E, it's a good idea to take it with mixed tocotrienols. You can take natto-tocotrienols or vitamin E with tocotrienols. I do not recommend taking, I never recommend DL-alpha-tocopherol because it's synthetic. Plain D-alpha-tocopherol is not a good idea because it actually can wind up being oxidative. It is an antioxidant, but it'll pull its oxidation from other antioxidants. So tocotrienols, when you get the tocotrienols on board, they don't do that. So that's kind of what you need. Then zinc, you're going to get zinc from eating animal protein because it's in skin, it's in your skin, so it's an animal protein, muscle fibers and stuff like that. But you'll also get zinc from eating nuts and seeds. And you can take zinc, and I like to tell people to take copper as well, although I tested my zinc and my copper. I don't take extra copper, and I take a zinc pill every day, about 22 milligrams a day, and my copper's fine. So your zinc copper balance can go off if you overdo zinc, but zinc is something that can fight viruses. If it's cold and flu season, you tend to get sick a lot. I would probably also add in quercetin. Quercetin is a great bioflavonoid as well. It's in onions. It's in some other foods as well. And quercetin is something that I take all the time because I've got that post-vax thing going on. So it's a great antioxidant that way. It's also detoxifying. And quercetin is best taken as a phytosome. I don't take it that way. I just take a lot of it. So you can take it as a phytosome or not. You can get quercetin phytosome. You can get the metabolite isoquercetrin. That's another way to go. The quercetin is a mast cell stabilizer. So if you tend to get hives, if you tend to have eczema, it can help with that as well. Fish oil is a great thing to take. If your fish oil, essential fatty acids are necessary for your immune system in part because they are, they're part of all of the cell membranes in your body. So if you want to make good blood cells, you're going to, you need to have good essential fatty acids on board. And if you're low in those, you can take fish oil, and fish oil will help with that. And the omega-3 fatty acids, they support your PGE1 and PGE3 series, these prostaglandin series. And those prostaglandins are anti-inflammatory. So it's a good idea to have those on board as well. You can take fish oil as a supplement. You can also eat fish. And if you want to eat fish and maximize your health in terms of fish, you could eat the smash fish. So shout out to Susan Weed for teaching me what a smash fish is. I don't think she made that up, but she got that from somewhere and I learned it from her. So smash fish. They can be fish that are smashed. So, I mean, if you're having salmon and smashed up, that's all right. But that's not what SMASH is. SMASH is an acronym. And SMASH is an acronym for salmon, mackerel, anchovies, sardines, and herring. And what do those foods have in common? What they have in common is they're high in omega-3 fatty acids and they're low in mercury. And the reason they're low in mercury is, like in the case of salmon, they don't spend a lot of time in the ocean, so they don't have time to bioaccumulate mercury. And the rest of the fish are small. So again, they do live in cold water oceans, but they're small. So again, they don't have time to bioaccumulate mercury. So they're high in essential fatty acids and they're low in mercury. So salmon is the one that's most palatable to most people. I'm not a mackerel fan. But I'll eat those four. I'll eat salmon, anchovy. I like anchovies. We had vegan pizza, not vegan. We had, gluten and dairy free pizza. We did have pepperoni on it last night, and I put anchovies on mine, and Ron said keep those away from me. But I enjoy the anchovies because as an Eastern European Jew, I grew up eating smoked fish, so I enjoy pretty much any kind of smoked fish. So anchovies falls into that. So I like to eat anchovies. I like to eat herring. I like to eat smoked whitefish and smoked salmon and smoked trout. I like to eat all those things. Those are not great to eat every day because there's some issue with them being oxidative. So I by all means do not eat them every day, but I'll have them as a treat now and again. But anyway, smoked fish is a way to go. And you can get lightly smoked salmon. And if you're lazy or you're time strapped, getting fish in tins and cans can be helpful for you. If you're going to get tuna, you can get get Chunk Light because it's going to be lower in mercury. And then there are brands that broadcast that they are lower in mercury. So you can get those. If you get salmon, you don't have to worry about it. You can get cans of smoked mussels and trout, and you have to figure out what you like and what you're willing to eat. Not everybody likes to eat tinned fish, and you can eat fish that's not in a tin if you don't mind cooking it, and we do that too. So getting your fish on board. Silver is also helpful antimicrobially. You can take silver orally. I don't generally recommend colloidal silver. If you're a colloidal silver fan, because you know it's worked for you forever, have at it. I recommend silver nanoparticles. And why the nanoparticles? Because the nanoparticles have been studied to be antimicrobial, and you can take a lower concentration of them than you do of colloidal silver, and it works at least as well. And it's been, silver nanoparticles have been studied to be antimicrobial. They've been studied to be antimicrobial for COVID. So I do, if somebody comes in with COVID, I do recommend that they get the silver. Is it 100%? Is it going to cure your COVID? Not necessarily, but they have been, all I'm saying is that they have been studied to be anti-COVID. So they're anti other microorganisms as well. So you can take silver nanoparticles orally. You can also gargle with them, and you can, there are silver nanoparticle nasal sprays. So a great nasal spray blend would be to have some essential oils in it, your xylitol, grapefruit seed extract, and salt, and a little fulvic acid for good measure. So I'm gonna mix all those together and use that every day. So it keeps my nose clear to make it less likely for me to get sick. So if you know you're going to be out in public, you might want to have that nasal spray and carry it with you. So you, so I use it definitely in the morning and the evening when I get up in the morning to get rid of whatever's been going on all night. And then, at the end of the day to get rid of whatever's been going on all day. And then if I'm going to be entering into a space that has a lot of people in it, I might want to do it again. The other thing that you can carry with you is antimicrobial throat sprays. And those, an antimicrobial throat spray is going to have herbs in it. So it's going to have herbs in it that like echinacea, maybe golden seal and propolis, and maybe astragalus, but definitely echinacea and propolis I recommend getting. If you're going to get a throat spray, I like those too, because the echinacea is a grand antimicrobial and immune stimulant. Propolis is a resin. Anything that's resinous is sticky. So resinous plants like poplar buds and any of your gums, like your myrrh gum, your poplar, myrrh, and propolis. There's probably other resins I'm not thinking of. Oh, grindelia is resinous. It has sticky substances in it. Anything that's antimicrobial that sticks to the back of your throat is going to help to protect you. So so propolis, I don't know that you can get propolis nasal spray. That might not be a good idea to get a resin in your nose, but in your throat, it's perfectly fine. Propolis is part of what, propolis is, it's considered herbal, but it's made by bees. It's part of what, it's an antimicrobial substance that's made by bees. It's part of, you know, the process of making beeswax and honey. And so, and you can extract propolis from beeswax. And it's very popular in Brazil. My Brazilian friends swear by it. And I guess they do a lot of, they must do a lot of honey in Brazil. But you can certainly get throat sprays that have echinacea and propolis. Those would be the two ingredients to look for. And other things like astragalus, golden seal, Oregon grape. Those can be great things. So when I'm flying on a plane, those go in the, those go in my pocketbook. So I have a nasal spray and I have a throat spray. And so if you're going to be around a lot of people, carrying those with you, the nasal spray and the throat spray is a great idea. And so lots of herbs to take. I take a little bit of elderberry syrup every day, and then more if I actually get sick. I have a combination that has elder and mushrooms and berries and astragalus in it. That I tend to take that more if I'm actually sick. You could take it preventatively as well, but I take plain elder every day this time of year. And golden seal, I believe, is endangered. And it has berberines in it. Berberines are wonder. They have do all kinds of nice things for you. They have GLP-1 elements in them, so they can help with your A1C. They help with your liver health. And they are wonderfully antimicrobial. They'll kill just about anything. So the golden seal has berberines in it, but because it's endangered, we tend to recommend Oregon grape, which is any of the berberises, Berberis aquifolia, or Mahonia. Oh my goodness. Oregon grape is not endangered. It grows like a weed. It is a weed in Oregon and Washington. It doesn't grow around here, but it grows in the Northwest like crazy. So I don't know if it could ever be endangered. So Oregon grape is a great thing to have around. And it definitely has berberines in it. If you pull an Oregon grape root up and you open it up, you will see that it is that bright yellow color of the berberines. And if you taste it, it tastes wonderfully bitter, like berberines. Really good for your liver, doctrine of signature. So you can look for those ingredients. So those are some of the main things you can do. You do them in different proportions depending on whether you're doing prevention versus you're actually ill, then you can hit them a little bit harder. And there are combinations that have a number of those things in them. But that's what you do. And then, of course, you drink tea. If you drink tea that has antimicrobial, anti-inflammatory stuff in it, again, if you were going to have a cup of tea, I'd recommend cayenne, lemon, turmeric, ginger. That's a great basis for a tea. You can get teas that have echinacea in it. I'm not crazy about the taste of echinacea. So if I'm going to drink hot tea, I'm going to be green tea. If the caffeine doesn't bother you, green tea and white tea have wonderful immune benefits. But turmeric and ginger, if you want to stay away from, maybe have a cup of green tea and then the rest of the day drink turmeric and ginger tea with cayenne in it. If you'd like to add the hot honey, you can do that as well. Depends on, not everybody tolerates cayenne or spicy. I'm fine with it, so I like to do that. And that's, like I said, the hot honey is my passion right now. So those are all good things to do. So there you go. So these are great things to do. Remember that rest and sleep are very important. Getting good quality sleep is going to be helpful for you. And spending time doing quiet activities is good. And that should help you through your immune system, help your immune system and help you through the cold and flu season. So next time I talk to you, I will talk about GI viruses because there was an uptick in the norovirus. And then I have lots of other things to talk about. But today I thought it was important to do a review on the immune system and what to do in the cold and flu season. Because it's the cold and flu season and people, I didn't talk much about coughs. Maybe I should do that next week as well. All right. So I think I'll do a piece on coughing next week because I didn't really get into what to do about a cough and bronchitis specifically. And there's some more specific things that I didn't discuss today. All right. So I'm going to let you go. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, Buzzsprout, and YouTube. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS stores and WHUS.org. Thank you for listening, and I hope your Super Bowl team wins.